This is side two of the oral interview that we're doing today with Mrs. Ida Notoff. The interviewers are Pat Meltzer and Bernice Alpern. We were talking some about healthcare with Mrs. Notoff, and she's just been telling us a few other interesting things that we think that other people would be interested in hearing of, other researchers. So could you continue, Mrs. Notoff?
I had mentioned therapeutic touch, and that a superior, someone that's registered in every phase, has assured me of my healing hands. When I first heard it, basically I knew there was something about me, because working with patients and the experience that I have lived through, at times I just couldn't believe it, because this one patient had, I walked into the hospital room, and she was miserable. She did not want any company. She didn't want anyone, but I greeted her. And as I was walking out from her room, she says, "Ida, come on back. I want you to sit down and talk to me. And in a case like that, you feel like the world is yours, because somebody calls you back. So they must feel something about you." So I walked back and I sat down. She says, "Come on, sit down and talk to me." And she started to tell me about her problem, why she's in the hospital, that her tear ducts are not working, functioning properly. In fact, she can't cry. Mm-hmm. And I sat with her for about 15 minutes, and I tried to console her. And I don't know what she saw in me, but she just was like in the oblivion. She got lost. And as we were talking, she started to cry. The teardrops started to just pour down. She got frustrated. I got frustrated. I had goose pimples all over me. She called in the nurses, and she says, "Look what Ida did to me." I've had a lot of other experiences. Mm-hmm. Even like today, this patient, we expect her to die maybe today or tomorrow. And I gave her a little light massage when I did her back, and she says, "Oh, Ida, that feels so good. How do you do it?" And I hardly did anything. So, and I have another thing, and being that I am giving you my history or whatever paraphernalia that I can tell you, I can help myself with pain, too. I have not revealed this. I have not said anything, but I intend to pursue further, because I've been doing, I was self-employed, but then I had to give up, and then I went into certified nursing, home nursing. And that's good, but my life is to help others. When I work in one home, you help one. But I feel that I can help many. Therapeutic touch is something that you can attain clinically by practicing. Mine is not such. Mine is, from what she tells me, is that God's energy, the energy from above, is what I possess. Uh-huh. And then I pass it on to my fellow man. So I'm really thinking seriously to get that going, because it would also help me financially. Now, that I would not do volunteering, because I'm giving up my material support because of volunteering. Like this morning, I couldn't take a job and say I'll be there Monday morning, because Monday I'm at the hospice. Wednesday I'm at Western Psych. Saturday I'm at the Presbyterian Hospital. So I'm really sacrificing a lot of material things, but I could not live anymore without doing what I'm doing. So it's I would say, what price glory, but I do get glory out of it, see, and that's what keeps me going. But as I said, going back to the therapeutic touch, being that I possess that, and it's not what I say, it's what somebody else tells you, somebody in the higher echelon, see. Mm-hmm. I do hope and feel that it can be pursued further, because I don't think there are too many that have that natural gift to perform that. And
I'm sorry. I was just wondering if you thought that anyone else in your family, maybe your mother or your sisters, or certainly men can have it as well. Do you suppose this is something specific to you? I understand the circumstances surrounding your birth were somewhat different, etc. Do you suppose this is anything that might run in your family?
Not that I know of. Not that I know of. I had a mother, and she was what they call, nowadays they call a woman of valor that contributes $1,000, and they'll call her a woman of valor. But she was a woman of valor that God has sent down, like an angel from heaven. I don't know. I really don't have any idea, and it never fazed me that I have that gift. And now I'm being really driven that I should pursue on that. Mm-hmm. I see people with, you mentioned about Dr. Wolhammer. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I can do that, but I can do that in a natural. He works with all kinds of, I think, little gadgets and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't have to work with gadgets, see.
Mm-hmm.
I have a patient or a patron, rather. They'll come in with a headache, and I came here, you've got to help me. By the way, the place where I worked as a myotherapist, they went bankruptcy. That's the spa, the Bigelow Apartments. So now I'm doing it at the Hyatt Health Club, talking about the headache. By the time they leave, they feel in a different world. Mm-hmm. I had a patient that was on medication for high blood pressure. She works at the Robert Morris. I worked on her, must have been about five, six weeks. And the last day that before the spa closed, she went over to me and she says, Ida, I want you to know, she says, that I was on blood pressure medication. And since you've been working on me, the doctor told me not to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing these things kind of drive you, and
yes.
I deliberate with myself. I don't know what to do about it. Mm-hmm. But as I see it, sooner or later, I guess I'll have to let the cat out of the bag or something. Because
Did you have any specific training initially in order to do massage or things of that nature, or you just take to it naturally?
Oh, I had training. I'm certified. But mainly is that I've been working with patients in their homes, and also even before with my family and all, and with friends.
Mm-hmm.
But I never took it seriously. See, I never took it seriously. But see, therapeutic touch is not; it has nothing to do with your reflexology.
Mm-hmm.
I do reflexology and that. My treatment that I give is complete from head to foot.
Mm-hmm.
But therapeutic touch is something else. I'll show you what therapeutic touch is. I have a picture of a man that does it, and you'll see what it is.
Good.
You don't touch. I don't have to touch you. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is really interesting. Okay. Well, maybe we can get back to a little more of that later, because I would like to hear more about the myotherapy, reflexology,
mm-hmm.
etc. Before you realized fully that you had these gifts and participated fairly extensively in lots of volunteer work or work for the spa, etc. You mentioned that you went to business school,
mm-hmm.
that you were married. Now, I understand that you also had administrative positions in a dry cleaning shop, and then you owned one?
Yes.
Were you and your husband joint owners, or could
no,
you tell us
I,
a little more about that?
I was in business with my brother. My husband was in the dry goods, in the men's line on Fifth Avenue, wholesale.
Uh-huh.
Wholesale, men's furnishings and stuff. I was in business with my brother, but before going in business, I had one job, as I had mentioned there, and in the capacity of office assistant, office manager, bookkeeper, supervised, payroll, et cetera, et cetera.
Why did you and your brother choose the dry cleaning business? Was it maybe because you had a little background and knowledge in it, or any particular reason?
Yeah. Well, the work that I worked for Liberty Cleaners. Well, I worked for Liberty Cleaners first, and then we went in business. I raised my brother. Mother died when she was 47, and I raised two children. I raised my brother and my sister, and I took care of them like better than my own children. In fact, I know that they appreciated it because I have some letters here. And my brother was the greatest individual to me, and he went to service. I sent him to University of Pittsburgh. He went in service, and he was a lieutenant. When he came back, he graduated from the University of Pittsburgh in Biz Ed, Business Administration. And the dry cleaning business was a lucrative business. And my bosses, my employers, wanted me to put him in business. They helped me, because they knew how much I cared for him. And this is how he went into business, and then I joined him.
Mm-hmm. And the name of the firm that you co-owned with your brother?
Cavalier Cleaners.
Cavaliers.
We had under different, actually yeah. We had different names, because we had like 14 one-hour dry cleaning plants and shirt laundry, etc.
You were a busy lady. Well, in the midst of all this, helping your brother, running a business, being married, etc., you've mentioned at least one daughter. How did you...
Two daughters.
How did you manage to raise a family as well? Did you take time off from working, or how did you manage all of those things?
I didn't exactly take time off. I happen to have been a very important vehicle at the Liberty Cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted me very badly. And I worked until, I think, the last week while I was pregnant. I worked there. And then when I had my older daughter, when I came home from the hospital, they told me to get a nurse. She wasn't a registered nurse, but somebody to take care of Cecilia, and they would pay. So I got somebody, and I left her in her care during the day, and at night I was home. I used to come home 6-7 o'clock, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had when I had my second daughter, after that I had to give up because it was a little bit too much. And then that was a time when my brother went into business, and I had to join him too. So
when your children were born, were you still living around the Bedford Avenue area, or had you moved to this part of the city?
When my older daughter was born, we lived at 5843 Darlington Road.
Oh.
And when my younger one, Rochelle, we built this home. This home is, I'm the first owner here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We built it. We moved in, I think, in August, and I had her September 10th.
Mm-hmm.
So she was here, you know.
I know your children received a lot of education in their home, religious and otherwise, etc. I assume they went to the public schools around here. Which one would they go to, or did you send them to a special religious school?
Both went to Colfax, and they went to Taylor Alderdice. My older daughter is a concert pianist. She's right now she's in New York, married, has two children. In fact, she has a sitcom running on Channel 4 TV. Small Wonder.
Yes.
She wrote the lyrics. Her name is Diane Leslie. She goes under Diane Leslie,
mm-hmm.
And that's at 7:30. I think it's 7:30 in the evening on Saturday night.
I've seen the show.
She graduated from NYU.
Mm-hmm.
And my younger daughter, very, I would say, brilliant, talented. She graduated Hofstra University, and she has her master's, graduate with honor on Dean's List. And she also is a Hebrew teacher. She was in Israel. She went to Hebrew University for a year. And, she graduated here from College of Jewish Studies, you know, Dr. Kessler and
yes.
Mrs. Baradon. So they know me all. So that's...
Is your younger daughter still living here in the Pittsburgh area, or is she in New York also?
She's in Great Neck.
Great Neck, New
York. Yeah.
Do you have any... I know you have two grandchildren from your older daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Any from your younger daughter?
Yes, I'll show you the pictures. She's going to be 2 years in August.
Isn't that wonderful?
She's gorgeous.
I'll bet.
I saw her... During the summer, I see her 2-3 times. In the winter, I don't do any traveling in the winter.
Mm-hmm. Does your younger daughter work outside the home right now? I understand. When you have small children, it's very difficult, and she probably is involved in all sorts of other activities as well. I don't know whether she might teach or anything like that, or is she involved with some other things, would you say?
She did teach in a high school in Great Neck, but then they have a deli. It's called Tabachnik's. They have in you know, Tabachnik's soups and stuff they sell. Well, that's a cousin. That's a cousin.
Oh, yeah.
And she helps there. And then she also prepares boys and girls for bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah.
Mm-hmm. Like. Mm-hmm. Good for her.
She also is very, her major was drama. And she took part in My Fair Lady in Hebrew. She was Liza Doolittle.
Mm-hmm.
She had several plays at the in Oakland at the Y.
Mm-hmm.
She did at the Belfield Avenue, and they all play. They both play. I would say five instruments.
Oh my! What talented people!
I sent her our baby grand piano, and that this thing looks like terrible now. It looks awful with that little one because the living room is big, and it seemed like. But I'm glad I did that because she can enjoy it. So it's we have a great rapport.
Mm-hmm. Good. It's just unfortunate they aren't a little closer for you. However, in another way, I'm sure that works out well. Also, as a younger married person. And raising your children.
I also raised two.
Your brother and sister.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were you married at the time you were still raising them?
Yes.
You say?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, say, as a young married person, you were working and doing so many other things. Did you have time for any sort of social life? I mean, how did people socialize at that particular time? They get together and play cards or?
I never played cards. I didn't have time.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, to this day, I don't put my television on. Very seldom that I put it on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have time, but what I did do, we did go to concerts. My husband passed away. He died at the concert at the Surrey Mosque. We went to lectures, plays like the Dixon at that time. That
mm-hmm.
wasn't for your time, etc. And we enjoyed it, whatever was there.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go out to dinner, for a treat. We'd go out to dinner on Sunday
mm-hmm.
afternoon, drive out, go as far as Ligonier or Sharon. And these are good. It's good that we had it then because now it brings back memories. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, people say you can't live with memories. I will never buy that because not all memories are good memories, but the memories that do remain with you, this is what upholds you. You know, this is what this is what it's all about. Like
sure. Part of you.
Yeah, this my friends will travel and this and that and go there, and I say to myself, well, I had my taste of honey, and that's I happen to feel that I have to feel that way, living with God, that whatever I don't have, I don't
mm-hmm.
miss, say. Because mm-hmm. it wouldn't do me any good to miss it. So I try to camouflage it with some other things of interest that will give me fulfillment.
I suppose that you have probably lived at this address longer than at any other place. You mentioned
yes.
you were in Darlington mm-hmm. when child was born. In your eyes, this is your perception, how do you think this neighborhood, and I don't mean just this street, but say the general Squirrel Hill area, the east end of Pittsburgh, has changed or remained the same over the time that you lived here? What would you say is the major differences or similarities that you
well,
see?
Well, the neighborhood has changed. The people have changed. I mean, everything has changed from the time
mm-hmm.
we came over until now. I would say everybody was closer to one another, whether it was neighbors or relatives or what. It seems that that's drifted away. It doesn't exist that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I have... it isn't only that I feel that way, but from just digging into it, I see that that's what goes on. You know, even relatives aren't as close as they is the word one time.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I would call it a different world than when we first came over here, and I don't think it's for the better that way. I really don't.
So then, the neighborhood more or less, the changes that have occurred in the neighborhood more or less reflect changes that have occurred in the world
right,
and all over.
Right. Right. Yeah, just with the times, changes have taken place in the neighborhood.
Okay.
As the time goes by.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I haven't had quite as much experience as you have, but I have noticed some differences also. And part of me, again, is what my mother, grandmother, other people
mm-hmm.
have told me, et cetera, about ways of life and that I observed, et cetera. Excuse me. Could you tell me approximately how long we have left on this, Bernice? We just stopped for a few moments, and we're continuing our interview with Mrs. Notov. Mrs. Notov, I wonder if you could tell us something about what was happening with your family, the community in general, the nation in general, around the time of World War II, and also if you could tell us something about your experiences of Prohibition and then during the Depression. Just your experiences, your perceptions, etc. If you could tell us just a little about that.
Prohibition, I know that they were very, very strict. I wasn't too concerned at that time.
Okay.
But I know that in a way it was just like now with the dope that's going on, maybe in a smaller scale. And people used to peddle it around. You know, there was a lot of that going on the side, but they were very, very strict. As far as what else was going on, I guess things were developing, I mean, for the better, education-wise, health-wise, hospitals built. I mean, the Montefiore Hospital, they had collections, $1 from each family. They walked around from house to house for the new hospital on Fifth Avenue. They started with Hillel Academy, which I was interested. My younger daughter went there. In fact, both of my children graduated from Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Rochelle graduated from College of Jewish Studies. She took all the honors that could have been gotten. And Cecilia graduated from Beth Shalom. But as I said, I think that I wasn't involved in volunteering or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I always gave. I mean, always try to give whatever we could materially. In fact, to this day, my accountant says, Ida, you're the greatest, but there's one thing, she says, one thing with you, he says, you're too honest, just like that. But I feel that way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Jewish Community Center, they didn't have to wait for me. I mean, I didn't wait for them to come and ask me to buy a brick or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just send in what I had to send in. Or with UJF, I tell them not to call me because I know my responsibility. But I can't say that I was as active or as concerned then.
Mm-hmm.
My concern then was to get my education, to help my parents, and as I said, after that, the tragedy that we lost mother, I had my father to take care of, plus my brother and sister, and he became ill. So in my job, working at my job and all, I had enough surrounding me without really anything on the outside world, see.
Well, were you affected very significantly by the Depression? I realize everybody was to a certain extent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, in terms of your business or giving or whatever, can you recall that then?
I never stopped giving. As far as the Depression, I personally was not affected that much because I was working, and my husband had a business on Fifth Avenue. People that couldn't afford it, they took advantage of the old things they had, old clothes and stuff like that, see. And I remember that I didn't do very much buying as far as clothes is concerned. But whatever I had, I always took care of. I wear clothes now that are 25 years old. I wore a dress last night to the wedding, and then I had to go to the Riverview for my performance, whatever I had. And that dress is over 20 years old, and nobody wanted to believe it. And I have to say, it's a nice dress. I have it here, you know. So whenever we didn't have as much as we were used to, we cut down because mm-hmm. we were already used to it, being that, you know, from the time in Europe.
Yes. Speaking of Europe, of course, there was a lot of turmoil, I think, before the people here in the United States wanted to actually recognize that there was a lot of turmoil, etc. Can you remember any particular experiences from World War II? I'm assuming that your husband wasn't drafted, and I don't know about your brother. Whether did your brother have to go to the
Yes,
service?
He was drafted. Mm-hmm.
So did you or your husband, and I imagine it probably would have been your husband, were you pressed into service as air raid wardens or anything like that?
No.
Okay. Did the, I'm not sure if you still had maintained your membership in this particular Zionist organization, did they lobby for the United States to enter into the war? Do you recall anything about that?
I don't recall that.
Okay. I know there were some groups who felt the United States should recognize what was going on and, you know, should enter the war, etc. And there was some controversy about that. Okay, I'd like to get back to your children for a few minutes again. Would you say that, aside from the fact that you were working outside the home and had a nurse for your first child, etc., would you say that the way in which you raised your children was significantly different from the way in which you were raised?
Oh, I would say 100%.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how?
Well, when I was raised in Europe, we had very, very little weather conditions, everything, like take even the winter. Here, when you see 2-3 inches of snow, you feel that, oh my goodness. We had 25 inches of snow. There were months at a time that we couldn't get out of the house. We didn't have water. We had to go to a well, but the well, you had to use a hatchet and hammers to get to the point where you're going to reach to the water because it was icy and all that. And we used to get ready for the winter. And what did we get ready with? We'd get like 40 pounds of potatoes, lots of flour, other things that mm-hmm. we will have that we wouldn't have to go out buying otherwise. So I would say that everything is different, like from day to night. And my children had they had better chances. I think they had a better chance, even though I worked. But we saw that in the evening. I was with them all the time. I don't think I ever had a babysitter for my children, mm-hmm. other than when we had this lady taking care of my older one and also my younger one for a while.
And I believe that you said somewhat earlier that religious traditions, etc., have always been an important part of your home life. So I'm sure that the children grew up surrounded by these traditions, did you, and you did also, so there was there a similarity in that in terms of religious background? You came from a religious home which observed the traditions, and they did also. Would you say that was similar?
I cannot say that, because whatever I say here has got to be valid, is the way I feel.
Oh.
And for that reason, I will say that they are aware of it. They have the education. They have the background and all. But to say that they are strictly...
I mean as raising them as children.
Oh. Here, in right, they were. But
yes.
After they were married,
well,
it was a little different.
Yeah, that's something else. No, I'm just thinking of when you were raising them as young children.
They got all the religious requirements and whatever
okay.
had to be protected.
Okay. Excuse me again. Are we about finished? Sorry. This is the end of side two of tape one in our interview with Mrs. Ida Notov on March the 23rd.